You can bet I'm doing numbers and my stock is going up cause of my hunger. When you see me in my zone, I'm locked in, not clocked in, I'm never boxed in. When I'm in my zone, I feel like I'm alone. I feel like I'm unknown to the world that's full of clones. My originality's focused on principalities. Broken, I'm lonely, my heart and soul to the game. They're scared to pay it back. And failure is a motherfucker.
What's going on, people? Happy Thanksgiving Eve. I am your boy, DJ Micah B.
What's happening? I am your man, live on location from your mama's bedroom, Mr. GQ.
Oh, my God.
Another sucker who don't see the vision in you, so you gotta work harder times two. Gotta make it do what it do with the limited sources you have. Your dream is still a fine rag.
Oh, we in that thing live.
In
season
that thing,
4 is here. If you caught season 3, you already know how it went down. So we going right back like we never left.
Man, no, we going straight into this thing.
No breaks in between this go
live on location. So,
live on location at my pop's house.
OG, what's up?
He over there getting his best DJ impression on. You know, we got the one and only live is DJ, DJ Micah B. But hey, DJ
yes,
OG
sir.
Be doing the damn thing too. So
yeah, I ain't gonna take nothing away from OG. That's the one right there.
100. But we over here getting ready for Thanksgiving tomorrow. We getting our, we'll call it our pre-Thanksgiving on. We done had the tacos going.
Thanksgiving
we got the
Eve
ribs going. We about 3, 4, 5 shots in right
yes,
now.
Yes, sir.
So it's been like that. How was the weekend, man?
Weekend was amazing, and I'm hoping to have a good weekend because I got 4 straight days off.
Man, you sound like me. I'm off till Monday, too.
Man, I got a Thanksgiving party tomorrow that I'm going to DJ. It's going to be great.
Yeah, I'll be here tomorrow. I'm going to go. Got a couple other locations I'm going to hit down, but it's going to be full of family, drinking, food, and dumb shit.
Hey, OG, what you cooking?
Gumbo, smoked chicken, smoked ribs, smoked
so what he said was he got beans
shit,
potatoes, yams, ham.
You name it, shit. That's what I heard.
So let's get rocking and rolling.
Let's
I
go.
Jump immediately into these power rankings.
Yes, sir.
You watched all the games on Sunday and on Monday. You already know how it went down. So let's talk about it. Starting at number 10, you got your New York Football Giants at number 10.
Bullshit.
You
that should be higher.
Tennessee Titans at number 9.
They should be lower.
San Francisco 49ers off of a great win at number 8. The Baltimore Ravens, who are on a bye week, at number 7. The Minnesota Vikings off of a very depressing ass whooping by the Dallas Cowboys at number 6. The Dallas Cowboys, who got a fluky ass win at number 5.
Yes.
The Miami Dolphins, who are also on a bye week, got number 4.
Yep.
The Buffalo Bills at number 3. Philadelphia Eagles coming off of their first loss at number 2. And the Kansas City Chiefs coming off of a dominant win at the number 1 spot.
Well, what you want me to say? I told y'all about Taylor Heineke. Y'all didn't want to listen.
Hey, we not looking at this man's Jordans.
Hey, this man got Jordans for every team he beat, dog.
And I ain't going to lie, them Travis Scott 4s.
Yeah, Travis Scott 4s hard. Hey.
So is them Green Bay's, though.
Yeah.
So let's talk about these power rankings. First and foremost, I think San Francisco should be higher, and I said that last week, too. San Francisco is one of those teams.
They should be higher because they got a this is what I say. They got a top 10 offense, a top 10 defense.
Yes.
That's what you need to get to the Super Bowl. They got both.
So here's this. So to play the real slash fantasy football game, right?
Okay.
Lamar Jackson since week 3 has not had 16 or more fantasy points.
I don't know what to say to that because Lamar Jackson was a guaranteed touchdown for the first 5 or 6.
But the numbers say, but we're going to see what happens after the bye.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you, just like I told you last week, Kansas City is a very dangerous team because now they are the team you can no longer game plan for.
Well, I think Kansas City should probably be, I know what I said last week, that was last week. But I think Kansas City should be number 1 in anybody's power rankings. And Patrick Mahomes has not wavered any without Tyreek Hill. So what does that tell me is he's as good as he was with and without Tyreek Hill.
So check this out. I got something for you. So since Patrick Mahomes became the starter, right?
Yeah.
He has not lost a division road game. You heard what I said. Check this out. Beat the Broncos in his first year as a starter, 27-24. Beat the Chargers, 38-28. Beat the Broncos, 27-23. Beat the Raiders, 40-33. Beat the Raiders again, 28-10. Beat the Broncos again, 30-6. Beat the Chargers, 24-17. Chargers again, 23-20. Beat the Broncos, 43-16. Beat the Raiders, 35-31. Beat the Raiders again, 41-14. Beat the Chargers, 34-28. Beat the Broncos, 28-14. And beat the Chargers one more again just recently, 30-27. 14-0 division road games.
So what exactly does that say? What that says is that Kansas City has been the best since Patrick Mahomes took over in their division, and he's going to continue to be the best.
And, of course, you've seen them make a change now. No more Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah.
And now Isaiah Pacheco and the Jerick McKinnon show.
And I'm pissed off about it because I have Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and I got to drop his ass.
I was pissed off because I started fucking Valdez-Scantling in my fantasy team on my money league of all possible teams. He gave me 2 points. Because Kadarius Toney went out. I'm like, all right, cool. But Travis Kelce had the game of his fucking life.
You think Kadarius Toney could be the...
I think he can be something close, but I'm not going to say he could be exactly that. But he also went out with a hamstring injury, ironically, because
he
kind of that taunt of a hamstring.
Yeah.
But Travis Kelce was that guy. I'm glad I have Patrick Mahomes.
Travis Kelce has always been that guy. This is the debate that's been sparked recently is he the best tight end ever? That's the debate that has been sparked recently.
That's a difficult debate.
And like I tell people all the time, it's a different time to play.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, okay, because you're also going to say, is he better than a guy like Rob Gronkowski, right? So,
no, I actually wasn't going to.
I wouldn't go say it either, but because Rob Gronkowski has contributed to more Super Bowl wins.
I wasn't even going to compare him to Rob Gronkowski, but okay.
But if you talk about the best tight ends, you cannot not talk about Travis Kelce.
I mean, well, I was going to talk about the two I thought was the best two tight ends ever.
Interesting.
Tony Gonzalez and the one, the only, the undisputed king. Skip Bayless might be mad, but Shannon Sharp.
And see, I would make the argument that Gronk is in that conversation.
He's definitely in the conversation.
And he may be better than both of them. It's highly possible.
I don't think Gronk is better than both of them, but hey, no knock. Gronk is great.
If you looking at the way the teams have to game plan, Gronk was a whole-ass mismatch.
Well, this is what I will say. Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Rob Gronkowski, and Travis Kelce should be considered the four best tight ends of all time.
I'm not going to argue that.
Easily.
I'm not going to argue that.
Number five is probably debatable.
Whoever
but those,
you want to put in.
Yeah. Whoever you want to. But those four alone are the greatest tight ends ever.
Yeah. But looking at these power rankings outside. So you said the Giants should be higher. So talk to me.
Yeah, they should be.
So convince me, based on that loss they just had, why they should be higher than 10. What makes them – no, I'm asking. What makes them better than Tennessee, San Francisco, Baltimore, Minnesota? Who are you moving them in front of?
I think they should be higher up over Tennessee.
Okay, I can buy that.
I do think they should be higher up over Tennessee.
What about San Fran?
No. Giants should probably be somewhere between 8 and 10.
Okay.
Which I am content with.
Which would put them at 9.
Yeah, I'm struggling to put them at 9 or 8. Who was number 8 on the power rankings?
San Francisco. Which San Francisco should be higher?
Probably 9. Who else is in front of them?
Baltimore, Minnesota, Dallas, Miami, Buffalo, Philly, and Kansas City.
Yeah, I'll give them 9.
I would make the argument that San Francisco should be ahead of Baltimore, not ahead of Minnesota yet.
I don't think Baltimore is ranked correctly.
I think Baltimore is lower.
I think they're too high.
I think Baltimore should be in the spot that the Giants are in. I think
the Giants are at 9 or 10?
They're at 10. I think Baltimore at 10 is fine because I still think the Giants are more complete. Granted, they did just have a key injury that just happened. One of your receivers. But what else does Baltimore have offensively?
Other than Lamar Jackson.
And because you've got a revolving door of running backs and a revolving door of receivers. You have Mark Andrews who just recently came back from injury. So... I would argue that San Francisco, I want to put them above Minnesota, but I don't want to be that guy that puts what we call recency bias into the mix.
They had
a really bad loss to them fuck-ass Cowboys. They did.
How high is the Cowboys on this list? Please tell me.
Cowboys are number 5.
What?
Over Minnesota, over Baltimore, over San Francisco, over Tennessee, over the Giants.
First of all, the Cowboys ain't better than San Francisco. Let's get that out of the way now.
The playoff numbers show that. In the playoffs, San Francisco owns that ass.
Yeah. I don't think the Cowboys...
Remember, the Cowboys had to go get a Deion Sanders to beat the 49ers in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that. But
I don't like I said, I don't think the Cowboys are better than the 49ers. The Cowboys should definitely be in the top 10, though. They should be in the top 10.
I'm not going to argue that.
As much as I hate the damn Cowboys.
If they were to play each other currently in this upcoming week, I don't think Dallas beat San Francisco.
I would bet on San Francisco because, all day, every day.
Because I don't care if Micah Parsons have the best game of his career. You're not stopping Christian McCaffrey. You're not stopping Debo. You're not stopping Brandon Ayuk.
No, no, no.
Like, you can pick one, but you can't stop the other.
I'll say this. The Cowboys deserve to be top 10. Top 5 is a fringe right now until...
They are still the second-best team in the division.
Yeah, they're the second-best. Wait a minute. I don't know, bro.
No, I do.
What's the Cowboys' record?
Behind Philly.
Cowboys are 7-3. Giants are 7-3. I don't know, bro.
And Philly has only lost one game.
Yeah, I think Philly is on top of the division. What I am arguing is the Giants versus the Cowboys because they're both 7-3.
Well, we know that.
I'm not arguing Philadelphia.
Now, that matchup is coming up soon.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I'm not arguing Philadelphia.
So we remain to be seen.
I think that's going to be a toss-up. But what I can say is, fuck what y'all talking about. I'll take a bet, and I'm taking the Giants against the Cowboys if y'all want to put a bet on it.
Hey, I ain't mad at you.
Why are you shaking your head? You don't want to put a bet on it? Nope. That's what I thought. Okay.
So.
I just said I'm worried about it.
So yeah, you should be.
So we talked about power rankings, right? Let's talk about the leaders.
Okay.
Very important category, the leaders. So we're going to talk about the rushing leaders so far after week 11. We have one running back that has crossed over 1,000 yards. Only one. So far. Who you think?
Because
there's been some great running backs this year. So
maybe it. How many guesses I get?
Well, there's 10. And currently 10 top, there's a top 10. So.
Okay, they cross over 1,000.
No. There's only 10 rushing leaders.
Okay.
One of these top 10 is over 1,000.
Saquon.
No.
Shit.
Saquon is actually number 2.
Pollard.
No. Pollard is not even in this discussion.
But Derrick Henry.
Derrick Henry, yes.
Okay.
1,010 yards. Saquon Barkley at number 2.
That is hell. You know what? That's a hell of a recovery. Yeah. He started really slow.
Saquon's got 953. Josh Jacobs has 930. Nick Chubb, 923.
Hold on, Josh Jacobs. What's going on, dog?
Check this out. Wait till I tell you number 5 is. Justin Fields at 834.
That's my dog.
Number 6, Dalvin Cook with 799. Damian Pierce, 780. Aaron Jones, 778. Miles Sanders, 757. And Travis Etienne, 725.
How about Damian Pierce for Offensive Rookie of the Year? Because he's definitely not winning Rookie of the Year because Sauce Gardner exists.
Sauce Gardner might be one of the first rookie cornerbacks to be voted to the Pro Bowl.
Oh, for sure. Sauce Gardner's a motherfucker.
So let's
transition
into the receiving leaders. You have 3 receivers who are over 1,000 yards.
Okay, so let me see.
I'm going to do you a favor and tell you that Jamar Chase is not one of them.
I know Jamar Chase ain't one of them.
I'm just saying.
Let me go with Cooper Kupp.
No.
Shit. Jamar Chase.
Cooper Kupp has 812 yards.
Not Jamar Chase. God damn. I'm trying to think of his name right now. Give me a second. Shit. I can't think
what
of his
team?
Justin Jefferson.
Justin Jefferson's number 2.
The dude that's number 1 in receiving, I can't think of his name right now. Give me a second.
You know who he is.
Oh, yes, I know who he is.
He's named after an animal.
Tyreek Hill?
Yes, Tyreek Hill with 1,148.
And I'm going.
You know the other one.
Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill.
You drafted his quarterback.
What's the dude that went from Minnesota to
you tell me you drafted
Buffalo.
His quarterback in
Stephon
fantasy.
Diggs.
Stephon Diggs has 1,033.
Okay, there we go.
93.
There we go.
Tyreek Hill has 1,148.
Tyreek Hill is on pace to break the record, too.
Yep. Devontae Adams is number 4 with 925. Jalen Waddle has 878.
I was going to say Jalen Waddle has to be top 5 because Jalen Waddle been balling.
Travis Kelce has 855. Cooper Kupp with 812. Terry McLaurin with 792. A.J. Brown, 785. And Chris Olave, the rookie.
Chris Olave, what's up, baby? OSU?
706.
That's what I'm talking about.
One more category. We got the passing
Ohio
leaders.
State University. Okay.
Passing leaders. We have one quarterback who is over 3,000 yards through week 11 right now.
Josh Allen.
Nope.
Shit.
Josh Allen is number 2 with 230. Nope. Tua is not even in the top 10.
You got to be. Okay, I got one more guess. So let me see here. Ooh, this is a tough one. Let me
go. No, it's not. No, it's not. Be real. Think about it really closely.
Kirk Cousins.
No.
Shit.
Kirk Cousins is number 8 with 2461. Number 1 is Patrick Mahomes with 3265. Josh Allen with 29.
I just 30. you know I didn't want to believe it was Patrick Mahomes, but
number 3 is Joey B, 2890. Tom Brady is number 4 with 2805. Justin Herbert 2730 at number 5.
Where my boy Justin Fields at?
Not in the top 10.
Justin, I don't care about that. I just say where he is.
Oh, I'm only looking at the top 10.
Okay.
Aaron Rodgers is number 6, actually.
With how?
2,542 yards. Geno Smith, number 7.
What's up, Geno?
2,474.
That's my dog.
Your boy, Kim Folk, Kirk.
Of
number
course.
Number 8 with 2,461.
You already know.
Ryan at number 9 with 2,443. And number 10 is Jared Goff at 2,442.
Matt Ryan. What's up, ATL? I see you, dog.
So that's what we're looking at. That
okay.
is your current top 10 passing leaders.
Well, shit. Okay. That was a little bit different than I was expecting. What's up, though, man? Okay.
So, continuing on this trend, we've been talking about everything NFL. Remember, we had our conversation about the Hall of Fame last week, right?
Absolutely.
So here are your 2023 Hall of Fame semifinalists.
Andre Johnson better be on this damn list.
Starting at the top, Eric Allen, Jared Allen. For the Minnesota Vikings.
Jared Allen might be a Hall of Famer.
Willie Anderson. Rondé Barber.
Rondé. What's up, Rondé?
Anquan Boldin.
Hall of Famer.
Henry Elliard. Jahari Evans. London Fletcher. Ain't heard that name in a long time.
Hall of Famer.
Dwight Freening.
Eh.
James Harrison.
James Harrison is a Hall of Famer, bro.
Rodney Harrison.
Rodney Harrison is borderline, but Rodney Harrison was really
good. We talked about this next one a lot. Devin Hester.
Devin, listen, wait, pause right there. Devin Hester's a Hall of Famer. I don't give a damn what nobody got. That man got the most return touchdowns ever. Devin Hester's a Hall of Famer.
Next up, you have Torrey Holt.
Ooh.
That's a close one, right?
Hall of Famer.
Right after that, you have Andre Johnson.
Hall of Famer, and it's not close, bro. I don't even want to hear no bullshit.
Albert Lewis, Robert Mathis. Ain't heard that name in a hot minute.
No, I haven't heard that name in a minute.
Player. Darrell Revis.
Hall of Famer. It's not
even. Steve Smith Sr.
Hall of Famer.
Fred Taylor.
Ooh.
Joe Thomas.
I haven't heard the name Fred Taylor in years.
Zach Thomas. You're going to know this next name very well. Hines Ward.
Pause. Hines Ward is the only person, last time I checked, he was the only person to catch 1,000 receptions without being in the Hall of Fame. Y'all stop bullshitting to put Hines Ward in this damn Hall of Fame. He's been eligible for the Hall of Fame, I think, 3 years now. Stop bullshitting. Put Hines Ward in the Hall of Fame.
You got DeMarcus Ware.
Ooh.
You got Ricky Waters.
What you mean, about time? That nigga was hurt most of his career. He's not a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, so Ricky Waters, Reggie Wayne, Vince Wilfork, Patrick Willis, and Darren Wilson.
Patrick Willis is a Hall of Famer. Vince Wilfork is a Hall of Famer.
So I like Patrick Willis, too.
How many can go on in 1 year?
I don't remember.
I think he just got to get 75% of the vote, if I'm not mistaken. Hines Ward should be a Hall of Famer. They got to stop bullshitting with Hines Ward before he's not eligible no more. Andre Johnson is definitely a Hall of Famer. Andre Johnson is a top three receiver from the 2000s. I said what I said. Randy Moss. Then you got T.O., and then you probably got Andre Johnson. Andre Johnson put up 1,500 yards in back-to-back seasons. The first time a receiver has ever done that. That should tell you enough. And he was playing with who as quarterback? Matt Schaub. And the year he put up another 1,500, he was playing with Sage Rosenfels, bruh. Easily a Hall of Famer. Obviously, he's Texans Ring of Honor. He's the best Texan to ever play as of right now until J.J. Watt retired. So
100%. So that's what we're looking at. That's currently what your semifinalists are.
Yeah.
So obviously the list for the finalists have not come out just yet because we still got some work to do. So that's what we're looking at from there.
Okay, let's transition because I want to make sure and bring this up.
Go ahead.
I want to make sure and bring this up.
Oh, man, you looked at Joseph and you said it.
You mind telling me real quick what was the outcome in CJ's league? In fantasy football this week?
I lost by 3.
There we go. That's what I wanted to hear. I don't care nothing else about CJ League. CJ League is trash. So, let's move into basketball, though. So, here's what's going on with basketball, and here's why I told you I had what I had, all right? The problem that we're dealing with in basketball right now is 82 games, right?
Yes.
So 82 games is kind of a lot. I already solved the 82-game problem before.
Yes, we talked about that in season two.
Yeah, which I solved with 66 games a season like we did before. You play everybody in the division four times. You play everybody outside your division twice. That's what I said. Now, here's the next problem. People are taking too many rest days. A la Greg Popovich, a la LeBron James. Who the hell ever you want to blame?
A la the fucking Warrior Stars.
Whoever you want to blame. I have now came up with a proposition to solve this, man. You're going to love this.
I've been looking forward to this since we talked about it.
You should. So here we go. Here's how you should make the playoffs. Part of the problem with the NBA, what we're having right now, is more than half of the league makes the playoffs. You got 30 teams in the NBA. You got 16 teams that make the playoffs. So you got 14 teams in the lottery. Here's how you solve it for the people that's inquiring. The person that's number one and number two in their conference should automatically make the playoffs. Three, four, five, and six in either conference should be put in a five-game series. Three playing six, four playing five. The lowest seed that wins should have to play the top seed. And the highest seed that wins should have to play the number two seed. Just like baseball. This is why I love baseball playoffs so much. Part of the things with baseball playoffs so much, they got a three-game wild card series, which they changed this year because normally it was one game.
Yeah.
So they changed to three games this year. Play your three games, you go on to play. Boom. You play against the number one seed. Doesn't matter. Whatever the low seed is going to play number one seed, and then, of course, the winner of the other ones plays the number two seed. I love that. And that's what the NBA should do at this point. Number one and number two are the only teams guaranteed to make the second round of the playoffs. If the NBA did that, that would solve a lot of the, I'm going to sit out because we have time to make it up. Okay, you got time to make it up, but ain't no 7 and 8 seed no more. I like the idea of the play-in tournament. Play-in tournament is good. Problem is, I mean, when you're 7 and 8, nobody expects you to beat nothing.
But then you also throw in the ninth seed.
I don't care about the ninth seed.
No, I'm saying like the play-in tournament.
Yeah, with the play-in tournament. But if you're that bad and make it to the ninth seed, you probably shouldn't be in the playoffs anyway. I mean, did it work out in people's favor? I think it was the Portland Trailblazers that was number 9 and got into the playoffs.
I think the same happened with Atlanta, didn't it?
Yeah. Atlanta. I think Atlanta was 8 already.
Yeah.
So you cannot have a league to me where over 50% of the league makes the playoffs because it makes our interest. Nobody, and this is a fact. Dikembe Mutombo and the Nuggets beat the number one seed once. Golden State beat the number one seed in Dallas that one time. That's two out of the past 25 years, maybe, if I'm being nice, maybe out of the last 25 years.
Give or take.
And if you go back even further, bro, the 8th seed is not beating the number one seed. Let's just get that out the way. But the 6th seed, depending on injuries to their team and depending on how much they play, can. Because of the Clippers. Let's say the Nuggets.
Maybe Jamal Murray didn't have a season-ending injury.
Right.
So and all of a sudden he comes back, let's say,
midway through the season.
A month before the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. The 6th seed can absolutely upset the number 1 seed if they had injuries. Nobody's expecting the 8th seed ever to beat the 1 seed. And if you want to be the 6th seed, compete during the season. You have to make the season matter. Does you remember when I told you the other day, it was like, well, everybody makes the playoffs in our fantasy league. That shit got to get scrapped. And the way they do the NBA playoffs right now, that shit got to get scrapped too. It's annoying. Nobody takes the season serious. And if you are in 6, 7, or 8, you're like, well, if we get in, we get in. If we don't, we don't. You got to get rid of that. No more 7 and 8 seed. You play a 5-game series because obviously the regular playoffs is 7-game. Play a 5-game series in the first round. You play a 7-game series in the next round. You play a conference finals, and then you play the finals. That's the way to solve players sitting down. Kobe was the last great player that was like, hey, people pay their money to see players play. And it's not fun or fair to them if I'm like, you know what? I don't feel that good today. I'm going to just sit the hell out. Not trying to make hurt players play, but if you're hurt more than half the season, you also shouldn't be rewarded because you didn't play in half the damn games.
Which is why this next collective bargaining agreement is such a big one.
Oh, it's going to be a big one. People like Ben Simmons, Kawhi Leonard, they fucked it up.
Kyrie Irving.
They have fucked it up for everybody. And I'm tired of it. So I'm tired of it. Owners are tired of it. Other fans are tired of it.
This is the one time I don't blame owners for that. Because if I have a star that I have paid $210 million and you've paid out of an 82-game season, I've got you for 30 games. I should pay you for 30 games. I shouldn't pay you for 82
games.
That was
the next thing. You should pay before you play.
I'm not opposed, because the same happens in the NFL.
Yeah.
If you play that game, you get a game check. If you do not, you do not get a game check.
You're damn right. Either you pay, either you play for pay, or you don't get paid. Like, I can't show up to work without vacation time and get paid for it. And these trash-ass niggas shouldn't be any other way.
I can't just not show up to work.
Exactly.
Granted, I have leave time, but Kyrie Irving, put that in.
Kyrie Irving, Ben Simmons, Kawhi Leonard, all these dudes have fucked it up for everybody, and we're tired of it. Either you're going to play or you won't get paid, bro. Plain and simple.
Yeah. When in Kyrie's whole situation, of course, it revolved around like the vaccine and everything else.
Yeah.
Kawhi, we have no idea. Just put a question mark next to that shit because we don't know if it was injury.
And Kawhi's my favorite player. That's the worst part about it.
Like, the Ben Simmons one is unique because there was a different aspect involved in it. Yes, there was an injury aspect, but there was also a mental injury aspect into it as well. So that one's a little bit different because as a man or a woman, whatever your pronouns may be, we cannot quantify.
I'm laughing because it was just so random.
Yeah, but we can't quantify someone's mental health.
I hate that because there's no way to tell.
And it's not, and I hate it because people will obviously use it as an excuse. But in the case of Ben Simmons, I understand you were just with a team that was on the verge of making, you know, a big playoff
and booing you at that.
Yeah, and something happened, and, you know, different generations, different kids, different situations. Mentally, maybe that was just too much for him.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to knock him for that. But what I don't want is players being like, oh, well, this is how Ben Simmons did it. I'm going to do it like that. If you're not going to essentially a behavioral health specialist and getting it documented, then I'm not going to buy any stock into it.
That was the next thing I was going to say. You should have to go to a doctor.
A lot of teams have behavioral health specialists. So either you do that or you do like the NFL with the concussions and you have a third party that's not affiliated with said sport just to make sure that it is justified, I think is the word I'm going
to
say.
Justified is the word because you want to make sure it's not bullshit.
So make it a third party, somebody who's not affiliated with the NFL, NBA, whatever the case might be, and go from there.
There you go.
I see no other way of going about it that way. Yeah. Now, I do, like I said, this collective bargaining agreement could potentially draw a lockout.
Of course. Because players aren't going to want to give up the power where they get paid for not playing.
This is one of the few times where I'm like, I kind of don't disagree with the owners because boys just sitting out in street clothes, hanging out. Hey, man.
Drinking, making millions.
Listen, I switch places with you.
What?
I
switch places tomorrow.
You gonna pay me $110 million to play 82 basketball games and travel all across the world and then show up
for 6 months?
And you think I'm gonna be there? If I'm not injured, I'm playing.
Man, come on, dog.
Like, if I'm not injured, I'm playing. Look, listen. We all have careers. Listen. I'm currently working on year number 16 in the military.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
16 years already?
I'm coming up. I'm working. Damn. But I mean, you know how many days off or how much time off I've taken? Not very much.
Probably 2 weeks at the most.
Like, not very much because I want to get paid. I like my paychecks. I like my family stability.
There you go.
So that's how I see it.
Yeah.
So as you can see, it's gotten a lot quieter. So the atmosphere has died down just a wee bit, but let's go ahead and get these shout outs rocking and rolling.
Okay.
just so y'all understand, we're not doing our typical normal show that you would come to expect from us. This is a bit more of a
live on location.
Live on location slash faster show.
What simply, in the hell? Oh, Shiner.
It's Shiner. Oh,
that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, that's that Shiner Black Lager. Yeah, so.
That Jose Bohemian. Mm-hmm. I am just a poor boy. Nobody loves me.
And he is popping that top with his teeth. Typical island boy.
Bad man ting.
It is definitely a bad man ting.
So we're getting, you know what? Let's do this. You lead in the shout outs for once.
Oh, I'm going to lead the shout outs for once. All right. Well,
yeah.
I'm going to give a shout out to the motherfucking safety cone in the building, a.k.a. Joseph Beverly over there with that bright ass orange polo hoodie thing going on. That's why I said my man look like a whole safety cone right now. So we ain't going to have no problems crashing into nothing because we're going to see him. So my shout out goes out to that young man over there.
Okay. My shout out is going to go to Alexis. Live on location tonight. What's going on, Alexis?
Hey, guys.
The whole family on location.
Whole family. And of course, I can't go any further without shouting out OG in the building. OG, we here.
Somewhere floating around this house.
He's somewhere out here, man. He just, that man will cook some tacos. This is Thanksgiving Eve for us. You know, I know you big on family. I'm big on family. You know, this is extended family for me. So
let's take it a step further, and let me ask you what you're thankful for on this 2022 year.
Okay.
Pro.
All right. I am most thankful for this podcast, because this podcast has given us a voice. I'm thankful for this podcast. I'm thankful for this whole-ass Cowboys fan behind me. Y'all can figure out who the hell that is after.
Right.
He's still a hoe. That's my dog, but he's still a hoe.
Cowboys fan or not, he's still a hoe.
Yeah. And, of course, I'm thankful for the people that aren't relatives, but they're family. And for the people that don't understand, you don't got to be blood-related to be family.
At all.
And that's one of my biggest things. So here I am at your dad's house, OG. And I'm thankful that I'm always invited. I'm thankful for this man giving me advice and all that. So I'm always thankful for the family that's not blood related.
I am 100% thankful for my girls. I don't know where in this life I would be at 33 years old without my girls.
Yep.
My crazy ass teenager. My off the wall ass 15-month-old,
and my that's going on 32,
and my significant other who is currently at work right now working another 12, because everything in this world is about making that bread so that we can keep these girls happy.
Yep.
So I am 100% thankful for my girls. I don't think if you asked me 5 years ago where my life would be 5 years from then, that I told you I would have a beautiful family full of my amazing women.
I don't think you would either.
So I'm 100% thankful for my girls.
Hey, you know what? Knock a glass to that. We got Jay in the building. Hold up. God damn it.
And we drinking that Shiner Bohemian Black Lager. If you know, being from the great.
Yep.
Let me say that one more time. From the great state of Texas. You know how we get down with that Shiner Bock. So this is another one of those beautiful Shiner collections brewed in Shiner, Texas.
Yes,
zip code 77984 for those who don't already know.
Joseph.
So we gets down with the get down. So
what's up, OG? Beer time, baby,
beer time. You heard him. He said beer time.
OG, hey man, look, I need you to come over here and grab the mic.
What time are you checking on that chicken though? That bird is good. He said that bird is good.
All I need is a one word answer. All right, all I need because I know you keep up with sports and things. Who's the best NFL team?
He want to say his Raiders so bad.
He has to turn back and be like, hold on.
He
want to
say his Raiders so bad, but then that's not true.
No. We're talking about right now today.
Right now today.
And do not say the Dallas Cowboys.
San Francisco.
Ooh, San Francisco.
You heard what he said. He said San Francisco.
Thank you for not saying the Cowboys, because, you know, Cowboys fan here.
But the Cowboys is good for us for regular season. And they're going to do what they do when it comes time to show up.
I think the Cowboys are good until they run into the Packers. I'm not going to lie to you.
So we was talking a couple days ago, and since you already here, it kind of makes perfect sense. So we already talking about getting our season tickets for the Roughnecks for XFL.
Hey!
Oh, but no. We're going to take it a step further. We're looking at suite seats.
Okay.
And it's a $500 deposit.
Okay. $500 and how much overall?
No. $500 deposit to get down. So once we lock that in, now we get a phone call and they say, hey, the game is coming up. Where do you want to sit?
Shit!
So we already,
man, what?
So you already got me, Boss Man, and Josh already talking about it. When he was like, hey, ask your boy Mike. I said, well, shit, I'm going to ask him on the show. So
I'm down for that. Hey.
Income tax time ain't good.
Boy,
we're trying to lock this in way before.
Yeah, that's when the season.
We're trying to lock this in like January.
Yeah. For those of you that don't know, we're very, very, very big fans of XFL, especially the Houston Roughnecks.
Got it hanging up in the room.
Hey,
100.
We love it.
So that's what we're looking at. We're looking at getting some season suite tickets. Not season tickets, some season suite tickets.
I like
tickets.
It. Only $500. I can lock that one in, though.
Yeah, so, well, that's a good thing. It'll be broken up amongst the group.
Hell yeah.
So we get that. Now we got a suite. Hey, we could do, hey, we see what's up with doing a podcast up in the motherfucking suite for the XFL game.
About $500 altogether?
Yes.
Oh,
you missed that.
You missed that whole conversation.
Jackass.
Somebody did not pass Algebra 2 that well.
At all.
Head ass.
Together, I thought it was $500.
You should have took sign language then. Yeah.
He didn't take ASL. No. He thought ASL was age, sex, and language.
Oh my God. A sex location, real quick.
Back to the AOL days.
Hey,
one time.
Man. Hey, that's the AIM shit.
That's the shit. That AIM shit. That's, yeah.
Alexa, you know what AIM is? Hell no. Nah. Okay,
AOL,
let's keep it pushing.
Instant Messenger. Hey, so yeah. So speaking of NBA, we were talking about this a second ago. So I watched this game very closely last night.
Okay.
And I'm not talking about the Lakers and Suns. Fuck that game.
I don't blame you.
I was watching.
Trash.
I was actually watching the Brooklyn Nets in the Philadelphia game.
Oh, yeah, that was a good game.
Granted, the 76ers were missing all of their star power, minus Tobias Harris. But
figure it also, if you don't have, what was Shaq Milton? And what was that? DeAndre Milton?
No, Harris.
Milton.
If you don't,
if you don't have either one of those, and you're working the waiver wire, that's two players to look at because Harden isn't coming back for a while. And Embiid
Maxie is also going to be out for a hot minute.
And Embiid's not supposed to be back, I think, until Sunday.
Yeah.
So,
and then we don't know we don't know the timeline on James Harden.
Yeah.
But I brought that up because I really, really watched this game from a coaching perspective.
Okay.
And I really wanted
I did too.
So I can say this confidently. I actually was impressed with what I saw from Ben Simmons last night.
You should be.
So,
and it was very encouraging.
So I say that because of this. I completely 100% understand why a guy like Ben Simmons is successful. Here's the crazy thing about a guy like a Ben Simmons.
Okay.
So we always talk about intangibles, right?
Yeah.
So Ben Simmons is literally the combination of everything you want in a basketball player minus the offensive production as far as like in the half court setting.
As in scoring.
Yes.
Okay.
But as far as your transition, your defensive, your rebounding, your passing.
Yeah, he has everything. He's loaded.
I don't know if there is another player outside of a LeBron James, a Chris Paul, who is better at finding his teammates the way Ben Simmons does. And I'm not talking about in the half court. Because the transition play is last.
But you ain't even got to explain it to me. I
have to explain it for the general populace.
I don't think anybody comes close to Ben Simmons other than LeBron and like Chris Paul.
I can safely say that I love his basketball IQ.
I don't know. That ain't my forte.
Don't be scared.
So his basketball IQ is Oh, this that chocolate stout. Oh, that chocolate porter. All right, this is a chocolate porter beer.
Ooh.
So I'm gonna take a sip. I'm gonna let you know. It's not what I thought. I was expecting it to taste like, you know, we used to take like the Hershey syrup and just take. It's not like that, but it's got enough of a hint of chocolate. It's not bad.
Yeah, that's different.
It's a Hershey beer. It's not bad though.
That is different.
Okay. All right, for a chocolate porter, that ain't too bad. But so yeah, so what I was talking about was essentially we're talking about basketball IQ. You can't teach that. And to see somebody who sees the entire court, finds his teammates at all times, always looking for the best possible shot, you can't coach that. So I enjoyed watching that last night from a guy like Ben Simmons because we know he's been the subject of a ton of controversy and everything else under the sun. So it was good to see him kind of come out of his shell against his former team, even if their former team was missing some key players last night. So it was a good game to see. So I know you don't watch a lot of basketball, but it's okay. You know, even if you are a Rockets fan, but it is what it is.
Watch it. It's just that I can't analyze like you and Micah can.
Well, understood. I completely understand. So that makes you a big Rockets fan. Or you're a Mavericks fan. Okay, you're a Rockets fan. Okay.
Most definitely. So, no. Only Dallas team I support is the Cowboys.
Okay. I wasn't sure, so I had to ask. All right, so how many Rockets games have you seen this year?
Three.
Okay. So what do you think about your team thus far? We've only been about, I think we're 15 or 16 games in, give or take, on the season.
I'm worried. Only because it's like the Rockets start out. Now, if they have a rocky start out, they normally fix things and have a decent season. Okay. Now, from the three games that I have watched, I was not satisfied.
Okay.
Like, defense is like their transitioning was a little slower than normal. Than what I'm used to when I'm watching them.
Okay.
Scoring, they there. It's just that there's some critiques that should be made.
Okay.
So but yeah.
I see where you at. Here's my thing with the Rockets, if I'm being completely honest. The Rockets are very young. The Rockets have a coach that is a very good coach, but he's coaching a bunch of young kids. It kind of looks like your boy from I think it was Florida that's coaching OKC. I can't remember his name off the top of it, but you know what I'm talking about though. But like you're coaching a bunch of young players, a lot of young talent.
Why can't I think of his
but
name
the name? NBA is here's the thing, and this is crazy. Is the craziest thing is one of our favorite TV personalities said this earlier today, Colin Cowherd. Young teams don't win championships. He said that verbatim. And I was like, that's true. Because look at it. When is the last time a young NBA team has won a championship? Doesn't happen. It's typically a veteran team. When is the last time a young quarterback has led a veteran or a younger NFL team to a Super Bowl? Outside of Tom Brady?
Patrick Mahomes, maybe.
Maybe.
A little young.
But I mean, it doesn't happen often enough to where it's like, all right, I got a young team. We got a chance to win. The Rockets are still, I'm going to say two seasons away from being where they need to be. I just really hope they don't fire their coach too soon. I don't think they should fire their coach at all, but we're in such a win now generation where I could see them firing their coach next season. And I don't want that to happen. Because if they do, here's what's going to happen. Let me tell you exactly what's going to happen. The Gary Kubiak effect. That coach going to go to a veteran team and win a motherfucking NBA championship. That's what's going to happen. Because he's a great coach. He is a great coach. Great X's and O's. All those types of things. He's just currently coaching a very young team.
Steven Silas is amazing, bro.
And it's not his fault. He's coaching a young team. And you're expecting this. And he does have an owner that is all about women. If you know anything about being from Texas, Tilma Fertitta does not fuck around with the fuck around. Tilma Fertitta likes results.
Landry's.
So he also has a, you know, don't mind you, the stadium at U of H at the basketball center is named after him too, the Tilma Fertitta Center. So he's about winning. I hope he keeps this guy, but I can see where he would be like, all right, I'm going to go find me another guy.
Yeah.
But your roster is still too young to be viable. Your roster's not young like the Pelicans. It's not young like that. The Pelicans could easily make a big playoff push because they have veterans in the right places on top of young talent. There's a big difference.
Pelicans
fall under a different tree just simply because
They have C.J. McCollum and Brandon Ingram is another good. He's in transition from being young into veteran.
But remember, the Pelicans were really young, and they made a decent playoff push.
They made a hell of a play last year.
Mind you, obviously it's without Zion, but they were young. Yeah. But the Rockets don't have that star power to do that.
Well, they got rid of P.J. Tucker, and I'm pretty sure by the trade deadline, Eric Gordon is going to be gone.
Yeah.
The Rockets are just going to hit the reset button, which I believe at this point is the right play. James Harden is gone. Russell Westbrook is gone.
In what regard?
Huh?
Because your team is surrounded by young players that the Rockets drafted. So what reset button are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about anybody that's left from the James Harden era.
Okay.
So Eric Gordon is the last player left from that era. And Eric Gordon is on a 5-year contract for like 70-something million.
That's a nasty contract.
It's really not that bad if you think about it in terms of day. Normally you give a $70 million contract to somebody that can score 15 to 16 points. And Eric Gordon is more than capable of scoring 15 to 16 points.
But I mean, he would have to go to the right veteran team or contender. Excuse me, playoff contender. I'm sorry, I said that incorrectly.
I think Eric Gordon would do good for a team, probably like the Lakers.
I think he'd be better fit in Miami. And not Miami, I'm sorry, Milwaukee. Excuse me, I said that incorrectly.
Milwaukee would be good too.
I could see the fit in. I could even see the fit in Utah.
I just don't see where.
Not Utah. I meant Denver. I'm sorry.
I just don't see where Milwaukee would be able to give up the right kind of pieces to get Eric Gordon that the Rockets want, because their first round picks would be so low in the draft. So,
but there's not a lot of teams that are at the bottom of the NBA that would trade for a player like Eric Gordon, because Eric Gordon is the type of player that needs to be on a contending team, because he is a great piece off the bench to fit a contending team.
That's true.
So the Rockets have to understand, if I trade Eric Gordon, I'm going to get a pick past number 20.
I don't think they're going to pick past number 20. I think at least 15 they can get, because number 115 isn't in the lottery. But you could also trade Eric Gordon for a future round pick. Well, damn. You could also trade Eric Gordon for a future pick. 3 years down the line, and you're like, okay, hey, Eric Gordon is the missing piece for this team because they need shooting, they need offense, and things like that. Any team that who has aspirations, maybe somebody like the Timberwolves, any team that has aspirations of getting into the playoffs and making noise and need shooters, especially the Lakers. Even the Lakers, I think.
I don't think the Lakers have any more assets to.
They don't have any more assets,
because outside of trading Anthony Davis, they really don't have enough assets to be viable.
The Lakers only assets is their stars, and that is Anthony Davis and LeBron, and not even Russell Westbrook. No. So Russell Westbrook will be on a free agency contract this year, but
Russ picking up some trade value. So
Russ is balling since they moved him to the bench, because he doesn't have to share on ball. And for the people out there, I just want to make sure and tell you, we told y'all it wasn't going to work. And for most of you, Russ is a superstar, and you jackasses. We told y'all neither one of these dudes could play off ball. We told y'all that. We told y'all they can't play off ball. We told you everything, and you didn't. No, LeBron can play off ball. No, he can't.
We don't know shit
He's
about basketball.
He's not a shooter.
Though. Remember that. We don't know shit about basketball.
This is not Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. He can't. He's not a shooter. LeBron can't play off the ball. His strength is his IQ, having the ball in his hand. Matter of fact, on another note, they should probably invest in to tell LeBron he needs to take a step back and let Anthony Davis take over.
Assuming Anthony Davis can stay healthy.
Yeah. But back to Eric Gordon and the Rockets.
Yeah.
I don't know what team can use Eric Gordon, but it would have to be like a 15 to 20-ish pick.
I can't see a team or a number. Like a fringe, unless it's Portland.
I don't think Portland would do it, because
I don't think so either, but
Portland understands that they have to rebuild.
Because like a team like Portland, Denver, I mean, I know.
I could see Denver making the trade for 2 or 3 years in the future. Not this next upcoming draft.
So you're thinking like a 2026.
Yeah, pick. Yeah. My whole idea is based around future draft picks, not upcoming draft picks, because I don't think Eric Gordon is the guy that you could trade for a top 14 pick.
Because as an organization, I wouldn't. Now, if I'm a veteran team that's making a great playoff push, I'd consider, but I'm not giving up a first rounder for him.
No, but then that's exactly why you got to give up a future.
Like, I'm not giving up a future first round pick. I don't think Eric Gordon is worth a future first round pick.
I don't know. Like you said, Milwaukee, he might be the missing piece. Miami, he might be the missing piece of Miami, too.
If I'm Miami, knowing how we know how the Don operates, I will give y'all Duncan Robinson, which is a bad contract for us.
Hell no.
Like I said, I'm just telling you how the Don is thinking. I will give you that because we're trading contract for contract. But at the same time, I could give up a second rounder, but I'm not giving up a first rounder.
If I'm the Rockets, I'm not taking Duncan Robinson's trash ass contract.
Well, his contract is not near as high as it once was. Actually, him and Eric Gordon's contract are very comparable now.
That's perfectly fine. But Eric Gordon is still a better player than Duncan Robinson will ever be at this point in his career. Duncan Robinson is I don't want to say trash.
I don't think he's trash. I think he's a specialist.
I think Duncan Robinson is trash. I'm not going to lie to you. Not even that he's trash. He's just not as good as what most people think. I think...
What most people are you talking about? Because I am a Heat fan. I'm saying right now.
You don't count. You're a rational... Yeah. You're a rational person. You don't count. So, what I would say is that if I was a team on the fringe of making the play, because I do believe that.
So a team like, let's say,
I do believe that Eric Gordon would be an upgrade over Duncan Robinson, but I also believe the Rockets ain't taking Duncan Robinson contract without a first round pick. There's no way in hell. So I do believe
I give y'all 2030 first round pick.
we're not taking.
I'm
that
trying
shit
to be
either.
That far in the future. No. Like,
I would say. Who's the team that's on the fringe of where I can say, like, okay, they're a playoff contender, maybe not a finals contender, and
what,
Eric Gordon?
Sacramento?
Sacramento's not even a playoff contender.
Based on their record, I mean, they're not. They're currently in the mix.
I don't think Sacramento's that good.
I mean, they're on a winning streak
right now. I think Eric Gordon would do a team like Brooklyn very well because Brooklyn would be good for a couple of years to where you'd have a first-round pick.
But how many more assets does Brooklyn have to give up at this point?
I think Brooklyn just needs to give up a future first rounder to get Eric Gordon.
Look, they're trying to get some trade value back by trading Kyrie.
Nobody ain't trading for Kyrie.
Shit. I'm going to tell you right now, the only saving grace that the Lakers have
since you say shit and that, would you trade Tyler Hero right now for Kyrie Irving?
Me?
Yes.
No.
Okay, then. So that should tell you enough.
You said me. I'm not these other billionaire owners. I'm just a regular ass dude.
I don't think owners are high in paying a player that never plays. So I don't think nobody's going to trade for Kyrie. I don't believe anybody's going to trade for Kyrie Irving unless they're just that damn desperate.
The Lakers would be the only team that would do it.
Lakers ain't even that desperate.
They're desperate enough because of the past chemistry between LeBron and Kyrie.
I don't even like the chemistry between LeBron and Kyrie in the past. They won in spite.
Again, you're a different person from what we were talking about.
I'm just saying.
But you're right. You're not wrong. I'm just saying, you and I being rational, we're not these billion-dollar owners.
I don't think Rob Pelinka would trade for Kyrie Irving.
Rob Pelinka wouldn't do a lot of things right now, obviously. Because Rob Pelinka couldn't even build around LeBron. Accordingly.
Well, Rob Pelinka's an asshole because he just built who he think is good players. He didn't build around who he had. It's a dumbass decision. At this point, I do believe, like I said, I'm going to stay behind this. Some people are going to kill me for this. But I think at this point, you should trade LeBron. Not saying that LeBron still isn't a good player, but I think you should trade LeBron and start to build for the future.
Yeah, if you can't get your hands on essentially what's going to happen, which is going to be like Miles Turner, Buddy Hield, and another player.
Which isn't bad because Miles Turner would essentially move Anthony Davis back to the four.
And I'm not going to lie to you. I like the fit of Miles Turner in Miami.
Let me tell you something real
because
quick.
Because we are one...
Any traditional center that if, is a star player
well,
yeah. could fit
but,
very
well
in
no,
Miami.
I'm just saying, if we can move a guy like Bam to now the four predominantly, and now you have Miles Turner, who has a better front court?
Who actually sucks ass in 2K? Miles Turner is the worst fucking 2K player ever. He's good in real life, but he's trash.
Why do you think that is?
Have you ever played 2K?
No, you know I don't play 2K.
Okay,
like that.
So
that's why I'm asking you.
That dude don't got no mid-range shit. He got no post moves or nothing. All he know how to do is play defense on 2K, and it's
Damn.
Trash because Miles Turner is actually a decent offensive player. Miles Turner can actually average maybe 15 and 8.5.
Okay.
Regularly. And on 2K, it tell you like, nope, he could average 4 points, 3 assists, and 2 blocks is what they're going to give you.
Holy shit.
Yeah, because 2K is not good to post players. The last post player they were good to was Pau Gasol.
So a guy like DeAndre Ayton is also trash on 2K?
Yes, because I play with DeAndre, they're also trash. Not saying that they can't score, but the way that 2K is made... offensive players, it's more geared towards, I guess
scorers?
You could say, real life and scorers. But there's hella people that's not all-time scorers that can score the ball.
Okay.
So.
All right. Let's make this transition. We got to do it. You know how we do. We got to talk about it. We have got to talk about the Tankathon.
Tankathon.
So,
tankathon.
For those who have not been keeping up with the show, the Tankathon is specifically talking about your upcoming NFL draft and
yeah.
the players, not the players, excuse me, the teams,
yeah.
and the current draft order. So, currently at the number one pick, the
Houston Texans
are standing strong.
Thank God.
At 1-8-1. Carolina at number two, who also, by the way, just named their third different starting quarterback this year. Sam Darnold starting this week.
Oh, my God.
Chicago Bears.
The first two was Baker Mayfield
and PJ Walker.
PJ.
So number three is Chicago, who actually will probably be without Justin Fields this week because he has a separated shoulder.
That sucks.
The Las
I
Vegas
love
Raiders.
Justin Fields.
The Seattle Seahawks, Detroit Lions. That Houston Texans pick is now number 7. They went from being number 13 to number 10.
Who's that pick from?
The Cleveland Browns. It was a Deshaun Watson trade.
Good shit.
So the
All
Texans
right.
are currently
Deshaun,
sitting
listen
at.
To me, Deshaun. I need you to sit your stupid ass on the sideline because whether you come back or not, the team is going to suck.
Nah, man. The Browns are going to be all right.
Sit your ass on the sideline.
You just want a high-ass pick.
First of all, it's not that I just want a high-ass pick. I love Nick Chubb. Love Nick Chubb. I love
So why are you trying to diminish my money league team?
What's the other running back?
Oh, Kareem Hunt?
I love Nick Chubb. I love Kareem Hunt. But think, the rest of the team is trash.
Hey, man, Amari Cooper and Peoples Jones is
the Amari, stop it. No, nobody was thinking about Amari Cooper was good last when he was on the Cowboys. I don't want to hear that bullshit.
Listen.
Trash.
Donovan Peoples Jones is on my money league team.
Donovan Peoples Jones is good, but he's not a number two receiver.
Hey, listen.
Amari Cooper is not a number
Peoples
one receiver.
Peoples Jones is absolutely a number two
he's
receiver.
He's not a number two receiver.
What is he?
He's not a number.
He's not a three. He's definitely a two.
He's
a big body possession receiver. He's a number two.
If he's a number two, he's a very low level number two.
He's better than Allen Robinson at number two.
That's not saying a lot.
Bullshit.
That's not anymore. Well, Allen Robinson was his prime. Yes, that's saying Allen Robinson ain't been in his prime for 2 years now.
Who fault is that? Not
he,
anybody
he's
else.
Not in, he's not in his prime no more.
Allen Robinson is top.
Maybe.
Listen.
Maybe with a good quarterback, Donovan Peoples-Jones might be a solid number two.
Allen Robinson is top 5 in red zone targets.
That's cool.
And has not produced shit.
That you're right.
Peoples-Jones at the bare minimum, is averaging 70 receiving yards a game over the last 6 games.
Let me ask you a question real quick.
Go ahead.
You get 70 receiving yards with no touchdowns. How valuable are you?
Valuable enough to take some pressure off of other
How
coaches.
Valuable are you? Not for other receivers. How valuable are you for getting 70 yards a game?
I think you're valuable because you're
I think you're good for 6 points. Because most leagues when you get 10 points to 10 yards, you get a point.
Well, we talk in PPR, he's a monster.
I'm not talking about I don't play PPR. So in PPR, yes, he's good. But I'm not talking about PPR. I don't play PPR. I'm talking about
sounds like a you
normal
problem.
Scoring. Yes, but you're not telling them.
No, but
you're not telling them is Donovan Peoples-Jones is good for PPR and not regular scoring.
I'm also actually I wasn't even talking about fantasy. I was actually talking about normal ass football.
I don't think he's that good at normal football.
An NFL receiver that is giving you 70 receiving yards a game,
I think,
is not terrible.
I think I can name maybe 20 receivers better than Peoples-Jones. I do.
As a number two?
As a no, not just I'm just saying.
No. We the conversation started as he's not a number two.
Okay. So
can you name?
No, I didn't say he wasn't a number two.
No, you did.
Just say he wasn't as good as.
He is not a number two. That's
he's not saying. A good number two. Is what I'm saying. I think he's a number three. I don't think he's that good. I don't think he's a good number two. I think he's a number three.
I think on the right situation, he's a great number two.
I don't
see
it.
Most teams would love a big body guy like this, but he's in a situation which we know Cleveland very well. We're familiar with Cleveland as a whole.
Trash.
We've seen it. All right, we've seen it. Hopefully,
well not trash, but they're not
as good as we would like.
They are a average team.
We are hoping that Deshaun Watson can change that.
Like, this is my thing with Peoples-Jones. I would take Jarvis Landry over Peoples-Jones right now.
I won't.
I would.
I won't because Landry's older and he's injury prone.
I would take Landry Jones right now. I would take Jarvis Landry.
You can have Landry Jones. He's trash.
I would take Landry right now over Peoples-Jones. I'm dead serious too.
I absolutely won't.
I would. And if you're just talking about health involved, then yes. I would take Peoples-Jones because Peoples-Jones is going to catch 3 or 4 passes.
The roles they're being
I personally don't think Peoples-Jones is that good. He's a solid number two. Is he a top number two? No. He's not a top number two. But he's a good number. In PPR, he's a beast because he's gonna catch 4 or 5 he's gonna catch 4 or 5 balls a game.
He's currently catching 6, but I got you.
Exactly. In PPR, he's good.
Well, but in the regular NFL, catching 6 passes a game for a receiver in general is not a bad thing.
But in regular scoring, if you catch 5 or 6 yards a game and you're not getting, let's just say 95, 100 yards, it's no use. It's not. And you know because the LSU League is not PPR.
I'm talking about non-fantasy football. I'm not even talking about fantasy.
And on top of that, he doesn't score.
That's not his fault.
He doesn't.
Because, and listen.
What?
I said what I said. He does not get the red zone targets that.
Let me ask you a question real quick. I just want to hear your answer to this.
Knock yourself out.
Julio Jones did not score in the red zone.
And he still got to do 100 yards a game.
That's fine. He could have 100 yards a game. But he didn't score in the red zone.
He didn't score a lot in general.
Okay.
Let's not play that. He didn't score a lot in general.
Okay. So he didn't score a lot in general. Now, if you had to take your top 10, would he be in your top 10?
Top 10 in what?
In fantasy points.
By default, he's in the top 10.
By default, by his talent, he should be in the top 10.
No, not by his talent. By the fact that he was getting 100 yards a game. That, by itself, is 12 points.
So
by default, he's going to be
top
10.
Okay, so Peoples-Jones is not getting 12 points a game.
He's getting 10 to 11.
Only in PPR, which I understand in PPR.
I'll take a look at standard scoring.
I'm talking about standard scoring. You know our league.
I do. That's why I'm not arguing. I'm just saying in general.
Technically, what is it? 10 yards to a point in our league?
I believe, but
let me not lie to the people. So if you get 7 yards, you get 7 points. 70 yards, you get 7 points.
I'm gonna use the exact numbers just so we're on the same.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So a typical game for Peoples-Jones, we're going to use, I lost it. There we go. 74 yards off of 4 receptions. Yeah, 74 yards off 4 receptions.
That's actually pretty good because we get 5 extra points for 20 plus yards, right?
Yeah. So that gave him 10 points.
In standards. So. How many passes he caught past 20 yards?
We don't get that stat recorded.
Oh, okay.
That's not a recorded stat for us.
But I know in our league for sure when you get, what is it, 10 or 20? 40.
It's 40 yards, you get an extra.
Okay, so a 40-yard pass, you get extra points?
Yes.
Okay.
So currently he has none of those.
Okay.
Because he's not. That's not his role on the Cleveland Browns offense.
Okay.
But his best game of the season, we'll just play that game. His best game of the season, he had, looks like, okay, 9 targets, 5 catches for 99 yards. That was his best game of the season.
Okay.
That gave him 13 points in, 13. Standards, in standard scoring, which in PPR gives him almost 16.
Hey, Kalissa.
Oh, she got a bottle of tahini in her hand. I'm scared.
I'm not. As much as I like, I like People Jones. I just don't think he's consistent enough. I just don't. Since you're on the mic, hey, what's up? I just don't believe that. As much as I like People Jones, I like People Jones as a player. I just think he's going to have his ups and downs. And not only is he going to have his ups and downs, fantasy-wise, he's going to have his ups and downs in real life. And every now and then, he'll go off 6-7 catches. But you got to be very, very selective on when you're going to play him to go off. Well, you better speak. Don't just grab the mic.
No, 100%. But he's been their most consistent receiver, whether it's home or away, which we know how Amari Cooper is, home versus away.
I would be too. Amari Cooper ain't, bruh. Sorry, I don't mean to disrespect the Cowboys in any kind of way.
No, disrespectfully, you want to.
You damn right. I'm happy you know, cause fuck the Cowboys. Disrespectfully, Amari Cooper is nobody's best number one.
Say hi.
Oh, you waving? Okay.
Like I like People Jones. I got him in one of my leagues.
I like him. I continue to enjoy him as a complimentary weapon because that's what he is.
Okay, so let me ask you this then: how many number two receivers would you take over him?
You're asking me on the spot. I have to actually do some research. But no, I'm being serious. Like, I don't want to give you a bullshit answer.
So let's go tiers then. Let's just say tier one is top 5. Tier two is 6-15. Tier three is 15-25. What tier would you put him in?
I'd put him in tier two.
Get off.
I would put him in tier
two. And don't look surprised.
Like, if I'm being honest, he'd be in tier two. Because obviously you're tier one.
Don't do that. No. Don't do that. Like, don't sit there and cry. I didn't pop you. Don't do that.
Like, tier one, like, because you could be talking about, like, Jalen Waddle. You'd be talking about... Because I don't know who the number one in Miami is, so I'm going to say...
I wouldn't put Jalen Waddle as number one. The reason why I'm putting Jalen...
So you're putting Tyreek Hill as number two?
No. I'm not putting Jalen Waddle as number one.
You talk about receiver two, so that's why I said Jalen Waddle is a tier one.
No, Jalen Waddle is not a tier one. Tyreek Hill is tier one.
My bad.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. No. I heard wrong.
Yeah, like it would be Jalen Waddle would be like Devontae Smith.
I think Jalen Waddle is a.
That'd be Chris Godwin.
Chris Godwin's a good comparison. I think Jalen Waddle will be a high number two and a very good number one, because he was a very good number one last year.
Yeah, so that since we're talking about specifically number two,
he's a star as a number two.
Yeah.
As a number one, he's just very good.
Which is why I have him as a tier one.
Yeah. So
those are the three that come to mind is Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, and Chris Godwin. Those are the first three number twos, because obviously in Tampa Bay, Mike Evans is the number one. We know that. I don't think there's really a discussion about who the number one is in Tampa. It's definitely Mike Evans.
It's always going to be Mike Evans. I hope his streak doesn't break this year.
I mean, okay, do you throw like a... Is Hunter Renfro a number two?
Ew.
But what tier is he? You know what I'm saying? Like, because do I include or exclude tight ends?
Let me ask you a question.
Because if that's the case, then Darren Waller would be a tier one number two.
Darren Waller...
Because Devontae Adams is obviously number one. So, obviously,
Darren Waller's better than Hunter Renfrow, which makes him by default a number two. But if we're keeping it at receivers,
Darren Walker is very interesting because he's too damn inconsistent. And it's annoying because, let me tell you what, Darren Waller has tier one talent, but it's too inconsistent to be considered tier one. Could he be considered tier two? Yes, I think
he'd be
he's
the
a high
front.
End.
He'd be the front of tier two.
Yeah,
in my book.
I think he's high end as tier two. But if Darren Waller is your best receiver on your team, you're in trouble.
I guess then that means tier one would also be a guy.
Travis Kelce.
Well, nah, Travis Kelce is the number one.
Yeah, well, that's tier one.
No, he's the number one receiver. Yeah, he's not even tier one. We're talking about number. We did tiers as far as number two receivers.
He ain't the number two.
He's definitely the primary.
So you're talking about tier one as number twos.
That's what you said. I'm just going off of what you said.
I would say.
That's why I said your Devontae Smiths, your Chris Godwins. That's why I named those guys specifically because they are number twos on their respective teams.
Odell Beckham is eventually.
Odell Beckham
be...
is not on a team right now.
I know, but
so this would be where your T. Higgins. There was another one. Thank you for that. T. Higgins would be another one.
I think when Odell comes back, he'll be one of those guys. I hope he. What?
Hell no.
No.
He gonna end up in either Dallas or New York. The Giants, not the Jets.
Yeah, I don't think he's gonna end up in the Giants. I don't think he wants to go back to the Giants.
He's in talks with both. He's gonna talk to both after Thanksgiving.
I think he's gonna either end up in Kansas City or Dallas. I'm not gonna lie to you. I hope he ends up in Kansas City.
Kansas City don't need no more weapons right now.
Why not?
They got enough going on right now.
So why not?
$2.
$2.
I see your $2 and I'll raise you to 10.
Ooh. They not glasses to this shit. I can't wait for this. Why you being like that? You can walk. Get up and walk. I do believe that I base everything we talk on the show kind of on fantasy more than real life.
I use more real life than fantasy because we talk fantasy when we talk fantasy, but when we talk football in general, I think real life football stats, analytics, all that fun shit that we talk about.
I don't think Odell is going to sign with anybody other than Kansas City or Dallas because he's going to sign with a team that has a chance to win.
He also has talked with Von Miller and talked about signing with Buffalo, too. So Buffalo is a dark horse to think about.
He ain't signing with Buffalo.
It's a dark horse. That's all I said. It's a dark horse.
He doesn't want
to play in the cold, but it's a dark
horse. Yeah. He ain't signing with Buffalo. That was one of his biggest problems with the Giants.
So we'll see when it's time. He's talking with teams after Thanksgiving, so we'll see how it goes after Thanksgiving. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Until then, we're not going to worry about it. Personally.
I love Odell. I love Odell. I think Odell is.
I think Odell goes to Dallas.
Talent wise, I think Odell is a top five receiver in the past 5 or 6 years. Talent wise,
I'm not going to argue with that.
Production wise,
no,
he's always hurt. So
100%.
Well, shit. Let's keep it rolling. How about this prospect on Jones versus I can't say his name right. UFC. Francis Ngannou. How do you feel about the prospect of this fight? I think this fight should happen. I think UFC
that fight is on that fight if and only if it's booked is on the same level as Ali and George Foreman. Rumble in the Jungle. It's on that level.
Thriller in Manila.
Because it's that big. Because it's big because you have a guy like Francis Ngannou who's been a phenomenal champion. Granted, he's been injured. But you have Jon Jones, one of the most dominant fighters.
If
not the best fighter. Depending on how you want to look at it. Say what you want about how he's gone in his checkered past. But I think if that fight is official, I think it is a very interesting fight. And that fight could literally go either way. Because the power of Francis Ngannou is an X factor, but it's the all-around game of Jon Jones that makes this fight even more compelling.
I love it, man.
Because the question now becomes, does Jon Jones have the power to hurt Ngannou?
damn the power. Is he quick enough to move out the way?
That part I'm not concerned about.
I'm not concerned about either.
Because that's one thing that John Jones has been good at is his movement.
Yeah.
The question becomes now, what happens if the fight goes to the ground? John Jones, go to the ground. We've seen that. No big deal. Francis ain't gone to the ground very often.
No.
So if we're talking just standing up, if John Jones gets enough counterattacks or is able to throw that elbow, can he hurt Francis Ngannou is the question.
I think he could hurt Francis Ngannou.
I've watched enough of Francis's fights where I'm like, it's hard to hurt that man. So granted, John Jones has been training and he's been gaining the weight and everything under the sun to become a heavyweight. We have yet to see. The reason why I'm not as hyped on this fight as everybody else, get the fuck out of here. That is terrible. That is some Houston rodeo shit right there. Somebody would do it. My problem with John Jones going up to heavyweight and doing
good bounce back, by the way,
is the fact that I would not immediately throw him into a title fight with the heavyweight champion.
Okay.
I need to see him fight another heavyweight, a contending heavyweight, and beat him convincingly before I want to just throw him into the title fight. I got it. John Jones is a
so if you had your pick, who would you put John Jones against to make sure he can fight in heavyweight?
You're kind of throwing me. Throwing me
that was kind of the freaking point.
Well, yeah, but I wasn't. We didn't. This is what happens when you go as we like to say unscripted.
Okay.
So I'm about this, to.
It's getting good because John Jones is one of the premier fighters of the UFC, even though, you know, the steroids thing and stuff like that. John Jones is currently light heavyweight.
No, he's heavyweight now. He's officially heavyweight.
Well, I just mean like his natural. If you had to pick his natural walking around weight.
Oh, he's definitely heavyweight right now. He's always walked around as a heavyweight. So I agree with what everybody else. I would think the fight with Curtis Blaydes.
I want to see him. You know what?
The fight with Curtis Blaydes is the one because Curtis Blaydes has been around for a very long time.
People might feel like this might be a little too early, and I don't care. But I think he should fight the number one contender, who I would say is Stipe Miocic.
Well, the number one contender is currently Cyril Gane.
Of course, but I'm just saying.
Stipe is like the Forrest Whitaker of heavyweights.
Because
he is a very tough fight.
He's always around. He's always contending. So I think Stipe should be John Jones' fight to determine whether he should fight for the heavyweight.
I'm not opposed if he was to fight Sergey Popovich, which I'm a big fan of him. I actually wouldn't mind him fighting Derek Lewis.
That's a good one.
But I think the fight with Curtis Blaydes would be the best fight to see what John Jones can do to contend for the championship.
Okay.
Because Curtis Blaydes is a very, very, very dangerous. He's a very dangerous fighter at the heavyweight division.
So the question is, because I can't remember, what was the last fight John Jones was in?
Shit, you put me on the spot.
The last fight I can actually remember him being in that I thoroughly loved was
Anthony Smith.
Was DC.
It was Anthony Smith, Lionheart. That was his last fight.
Okay. Heavyweight?
We watched it at B-Dubs.
Yeah, heavyweight?
Light heavyweight. Man with the hammer tattoo on his chest.
Okay, so this that's kind of the problem that I have. I think John Jones' natural walk-around weight is light heavy. Obviously, he's heavyweight right now. No, but
I'm telling you, his walk-around weight is 210 plus because I study this.
So why
was he around at a heavyweight? Because that's just how he naturally is.
So
he cuts on purpose.
I get it, but if that's the case, why do they keep letting this man compete in light heavy? Put that man in heavyweight.
Because it's his choice.
I get that.
Conor McGregor walks around a whole entire class ahead.
Conor McGregor is welterweight?
Yes, George St. Pierre walked around at a heavier weight. A lot of these guys walk around at a heavier weight on purpose because you train under a heavier weight, so when you cut, you're that much more, you're that much stronger.
But I've always been under the impression. To me, I've always complained that Conor McGregor did not walk around as light heavyweight because I know
he's not. He was never a light heavyweight.
I think his natural walking around weight is light heavy. I do.
Because he fights at welter.
I know where he fights.
When you cut weight, you want to fight where your speed and power is maximized.
John Jones walked
around a heavyweight, but light heavy made the most sense because he's maximum speed, power, and everything else.
He was another one.
Think about it as a boxer. All right, if I'm a heavyweight, no, fuck that. If I'm a welterweight boxer fighting in the 150s, and I walk around at 170, but then I cut to 150 and I feel the lightest on my feet, I feel the best I feel, why would I want to fight 20 pounds heavier?
I get it, but I've also been one of the people that's just like, okay, if where you get the advantage is going down a weight class.
It's not that going down is the thing, because most of your welterweights, featherweights, strawweights, nobody walks around at their fight weight.
I know
They damn near all of them walk around heavier.
But that's the point I'm making right now. I always felt like you should fight at your walking around weight. And
I disagree.
Even with boxing, I always feel like you should fight at your walking around weight. But that's not discrediting John Jones or anybody like that. I just feel if your walking around weight is light heavy, I think you should fight light heavy. If your walking around weight is welterweight, you should fight welterweight.
So the reason I disagree is I'm bringing the athletic perspective into this because I understand why these individuals are doing what they're doing. And it has nothing to do with the opponents. It has nothing to do with the opponents. It has everything to do with how you feel. As a professional athlete in general, you want to feel the absolute best. You want to perform at your best. Excuse me. Going through high school, I would walk around probably around like 156, 157. My competing weight for varsity track was 148 to 151. Because when I was high jumping, when I was sprinting, I wanted to feel as light and strong as possible. So I was dropping weight.
Okay.
So as an athlete, you want to be able to, you walk around heavier, just like, it's kind of like, all right, let's play the anime game. Let's play that game. Remember Dragon Ball Z, right? Remember the first time they fought in the hyperbolic time chamber? They fought under immense gravity, right?
Yep.
To prepare for an opponent that was that much better than them, right? So they did that on purpose, to fight heavier. They trained heavier. So when they came out of the chamber, they felt light as a feather. They felt the best they could possibly feel to fight said opponent. Concept's the same. As a welterweight, I'm 150 pound. I want to be a 150 pound boxer, and I want to fight at welterweight. If I walk around at 170, 180, and I train at 170, 180, when I cut that weight, I am lighter, faster, quicker, stronger, everything that I want to be when I cut that weight. Why would I not want to compete at my absolute best?
I get that, but I am also of the mindset that gives an unfair advantage. Not only does it give an unfair advantage, most people be like, well, if it gives an unfair advantage, just tell everybody else to jump up. But I have also been, even in boxing, if you're walking, that's one thing with, let's just take Mike Tyson. Because Mike Tyson is a heavyweight. Let's say Mike Tyson, that's a bad example because heavyweight.
It is,
because
heavyweight starts at 206.
Yeah. Let's take Bernard Hopkins.
Okay.
Let's take Bernard Hopkins. If Bernard Hopkins walks around, and Bernard Hopkins was a light heavy. Light heavy or welter? I always forget.
I think light heavy.
Okay. So let's just say Bernard Hopkins walk around at heavyweight, which I'm not saying isn't okay. But what I will say is that if your walking around weight is light heavy and you cut weight, of course you're going to be faster. You're going to be more crisp. But the people that teeter in between that line is an unfair advantage to the people that cut the weight to make that line.
There are very few fighters who actually walk around at their fighting weight.
But
their competition weight. Let's just generalize it. Most fighters are 15 to 20 pounds over. Like your best fighters, let's say your top 10. Let's just play the top 10 game. None of them walk around at their fighting weight. That's never been a thing. That it hasn't. In UFC and boxing, none of your top 10 fighters have ever walked around. All right.
Muhammad Ali walked around as a heavyweight.
That's Muhammad Ali was, but
heavyweight. George Frazier walked around as a heavyweight.
But heavyweights are a massive category. Heavyweight starts at 206.
Okay, so let's do this.
You had heavyweights that were 205 versus heavyweights that were 250.
Okay, so let's do this.
That's an unfair comparison.
Okay, so let's do this. Pacquiao walked around as a welterweight, and he held the title in three different weight classes.
He did.
Same thing with Mayweather.
His walk-around weight was 170. He fought at 150.
Exactly.
That counters what you just said. He walks around heavier. But welterweight is 150 to 165. He walked around at 170.
Okay. No, my bad. Pacquiao walked around because when he fought Mayweather, they were both light heavyweights. They were lightweights. I'm just saying, but they had to cut weight to make where they were going.
They both dropped more than seven pounds.
My point is, Pacquiao and Mayweather were champions in multiple weight classes. My problem with that is,
it wasn't multiple weight classes.
Mayweather was champion in three different weight classes.
They were all considered. No, it was all welterweight.
No. Mayweather was champion in three different weight classes. He was welterweight, light heavy, and the one under welterweight.
I'm telling you right now, he wasn't light heavyweight.
He was light heavyweight at the end of his career.
He might have been super welterweight, but lightweight, but not light heavyweight.
Okay, fine. Still three weight classes.
Light heavyweight is 185 and above. So I'm telling you, it wasn't light heavyweight.
That's still three weight classes. So my problem with that is, okay, part of my problem with that is whenever you drop down weight, even though you're cutting weight, you're cutting water weight. Most of them are cutting water weight. They're not cutting anything else besides water weight. And when you cut water weight, it doesn't cut any kind of power. It doesn't cut any kind of... The only thing it does is make you fast because you train at this much. And that's your normal walk-around weight. And that has always been my problem with prize fighting or UFC or whatever. I'm not saying a heavyweight versus a featherweight. I know that. But two classes down? Come on, bruh.
Who's fighting two classes down?
And Mayweather fought two classes down over and over again.
Mayweather's never walked around that big.
And I love Mayweather. I love Mayweather. Pacquiao, too. And I love Pacquiao. But they fought classes down over and over again. When you hear, hey, Pacquiao's been a champion of four different weight classes. Really? Really? You've been a champion of four different weight classes, bro. Really? Mayweather's been a champion in four different weight classes. Really? Come on, bro. What you're doing now is essentially just cutting nothing but water weight to drop all the way down to win the champ. And I love Mayweather. I'm a big Mayweather fan. My whole thing is, if you're going to cut weight to make certain weight classes, you should only fight people that cut the weight to make that certain weight class too. Not the people that walks around and fights in that weight class.
At this point, you're kind of nitpicking.
I've always nitpicked.
Because fighting has been like this. I don't think it's an unfair advantage, only because I'm using science to its maximum push here.
That's cool.
Because I have a fitness background, I don't see it as an advantage when you're doing that, because you still have to go out and perform said task, whatever the task, whatever task you're doing.
That's cool. And I get that part, but you have to also understand that, okay, this is the same thing to me, this is the same thing as if Tracy McGrady has the one-on-one tournament.
Okay.
The ultimate basketball one-on-one tournament. This is the same thing as a 6'1 guy playing against a 6'6", 6'7 guy. There's classes for a reason.
That particular argument doesn't actually quantify.
It does quantify.
No, because you can't control genetics when it comes to height. Weight is a different concept.
You can control genetics. You can't. Yes, you can.
You can control how tall you are.
Yes, you can't control how tall you are.
That's what we're talking about. We're talking about height.
But six one versus six 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 seven is an invalid argument. But you know very well, your genetics can determine how big you get too. As in working out and lifting weights, and you know this.
We're talking about solely height.
But I'm talking about class.
No,
I'm strictly talking about class
and height aren't the same thing.
but I'm strictly talking about.
No, but you just threw a class. You threw a height right, argument absolutely. Into it. That's not a good argument.
That's a good argument.
No,
because
6'1 versus 6'6 is a terrible argument.
That is a good argument because some people can, like my cousin, for example, my cousin Denzel. Denzel benches over 300 pounds. How much you think he weighs?
That has nothing to do with it.
No. But that's what I'm saying. Your weight does determine your class.
No, we're talking about height. You threw a height argument.
I'm throwing a height argument because
6'1 versus 6'6 is not valid.
That makes a valid argument because
there's five of us in this room right now that are five different heights, and we can't control that.
But I'm just saying that makes an argument because for the simple fact your height can also factor into your weight, and not only can your height factor into your weight, your genetics can determine how big you can get also. Because let's just say you have sickle cell,
you're not going to be a professional fighter with sickle cell.
Why not?
Because you physically can't.
Yes, absolutely, you can. I have a friend that has sickle cell that benches.
No. We're talking about fighting. We're not talking about anything.
I'm just saying.
We're talking about fighting.
But I'm just saying. You're lifting weights and your muscle definition can define your size.
As a professional fighter, you cannot fight with sickle cell because it's a medical risk.
Fine.
That's what I'm telling you.
Okay, fine.
Revolved around fighting. Let's keep it at fighting.
But I am keeping it at fighting.
No, you just said benching and lifting weights.
Yes, but you, how much you bench and lift, depending on your genetics, depends also on how big you get, is what I'm saying. So let's just say you weigh 175 and you bench 300 right now, right? Let's just say that. You could have somebody that's 250 pounds and can only bench 300 as well. And they're the same size as you, but their genetics determine how heavy they can get. So it's very valid that, hey, your genetics determine how heavy you can be, how big you can be, how much muscle definition you can get too.
Everything comes down to how you train.
It does come down to how you train.
I am 160 pounds, and I've been in a 1,000-pound club twice.
That's perfectly,
and I'm not a big guy. I'm on the smaller spectrum of the 160 pounds.
So let me ask you this. If you were going to fight twice. Would you train down, or would you train where you are right now and you walk? Would you train where you walk around right now?
In what?
Let's just say boxing for the hell of it. Would you train down and say, "Hey, I'm going to cut weight to fight a level down, or I'm just going to train in my walk around weight"?
I'm going to train where I'm comfortable.
Right, but
I don't know what that is.
Okay,
but I'm just saying I'm going to train where I'm comfortable.
But some people don't. But some exactly. Because you're going to feel more comfortable at training down. But some people will not train. A lot of people will not train at the weight they're at because they won't feel comfortable fighting at the weight they're at, which gives an unfair advantage if you're going to cut weight to train down. I do because a lot of people, since you said training, what they're going to do when they train down is not cut muscle definition and not cut muscles and not cut.
You can go up in weight and not cut muscle or anything of that nature.
But when you train down, you also get faster.
But you can lose power when you go down. You absolutely can lose power.
You can absolutely.
It happens to a lot because a lot of guys, we've seen it a couple times, guys who cut weight, they drop down, let's say 20, 25 pounds for the sake of discussion. They lose a great percentage of power because they are not accustomed to being
that low.
Give
me 10 that lost power training down. Give me 10 right now on the spot that lost power training down.
I can't tell you that. I've watched enough fights where I've seen it happen where guys are like, man, I was exhausted because I had to drop 15 pounds. Like whether it's UFC,
but see what I'm saying? They try to drop the weight.
Yeah, but that's not every single fighter.
But that's not every single fighter.
But you're trying to generalize it as every fighter training down.
But like, I'm not generalizing every fighter. Like, what I'm saying is some people whenever they're 15 pounds overweight or 10 pounds overweight, they try to drop all the way down
to a
lower weight class to dominate.
They're not trying to. That's what the weight class requires
based on Nevada's
conditioning, right. Whatever state
okay,
they're
so,
fighting. That's not on the fighter.
That's kind of on the fighter. So
no, it's where they're fighting. If the fight is in Nevada, you have the Nevada Fight Commission. If it's in New York, you have the New York Fight Commission. Like if you're overseas in Britain,
okay, then.
Germany,
If welterweight, let's just say I don't know the weight classifications for welterweight.
What sport? Let's play this.
Let's just say UFC. I don't care. Let's just say UFC is 180, but you want to fight somebody 175.
That's, to me, 175 is not a big difference between 180 and 180, 175. That's not a big difference.
But let's just say you 180. And matter of fact, let's just say you're fighting in the 180 class.
Okay.
180 to whatever, what is it, 195? Is it a 15-pound? I can't remember.
Something in that.
Okay, room. So let's just say you're 192, and you're like, I'm going to cut weight to fight the division below me, all right? But all you do is cut water weight by doing nothing but cardio, because you can cut a lot of weight by doing nothing, because your water weight is going...
Depending on, now you're playing into your genetics discussion.
Not everybody that cuts weight is cutting
water. Some people will cut fat or muscle or strength or whatever the case might be.
But that's my point right there.
But that's not fighter's fault. If they want to fight, like if they fought.
That is their fault, because they pick their weight to fight at.
A lot of fighters will fight initially at whatever classification, but they're like, you know what? All right, I fought. Like, we've seen this happen with Roy Jones. He went up. Obviously, he didn't go down, but
he went up.
But I'm just saying, he was like, all right, I fought everybody I can fight. I'm going to change weight class. Why if I'm 160 pounds, do I have to only fight there? What if I want to change divisions or weight classes? I'm sorry. What if I want to change? Because let's just say I'm the Anderson Silva of my division, and I've murked everybody I can murk. Maybe I want to go down, because the next challenge is to fight faster opponents. So I want to drop down. Or maybe I want to fight bigger, stronger opponents. I want to go up. Why does that fighter have to be stuck at where they're at because of their weight and their genetics and their height and their weight? That shouldn't be the case. Fighters move up and down weight classes all the time. Amanda Nunez held the title, the UFC title, as two separate weight classes. And she went down to defend the title, and then she lost it because she had to lose.
How many fighters have went down and actually lost?
McGregor did it. Nunez did it. These are double champions. Daniel Cormier did it.
But
these are my, double.
My kind of argument is that is they should have never been able to go down, because their walking around weight is where they won their belts.
What if it's in between both?
It's not in between both.
No, I'm just asking a question.
Because
the weight classes in, well, UFC versus boxing are way off. So we're going to keep kind of sticking with UFC. There is a weird little... That's why they have this thing called a catch weight. So if you're 130 and I'm 145, we catch weight at 135. That's called a catch weight. That happens a lot in UFC.
And
maybe it doesn't make a difference to you, but again, genetics plays a role. Maybe losing 5 pounds for you versus me is a whole different ballgame. But it happens a lot in UFC is what I'm getting at.
Okay, so this is what I... If you agree to the catch weight... Fine. You have agreed, no matter what, if you have to move up and wait, or if the person is overweight and has to move down, whatever. You've already agreed to that.
The same happens when you compete at the weight that you're competing at.
No.
You're agreeing to be at said weight. That's the whole point. That's why there's penalties for if you're overweight.
There's a lot of fights canceled because people are overweight or underweight.
They're not canceled. That person lose, like if it's it happened to Charles Oliveira. He was 1.5 pounds overweight. He lost the belt, but it was still able to fight. But he had to forfeit his money, and he couldn't win the belt.
You goddamn right, as he should.
But I'm saying you don't lose. You can still fight. Granted, but I mean, because here's the thing that people forget about fighters: you make weight, and once you make weight, you put whatever weight you're gonna put back on after the fact. You're never fighting at 155. You typically might show up at 160 or bigger. And that's all fighters.
So here's another thing. Here's the next instance: Mayweather versus Pacquiao. That's another thing. Mayweather didn't want to weigh in from the get-go because he knew he was going to be overweight. That's another thing. He didn't want to weigh in because he knew he was going to be overweight. When he finally weighed in, he made weight, and then he added weight on.
Both fighters did. Pacquiao definitely was bigger in that fight.
But here's my thing. Let's just say I weigh 145, you weigh 165. Let's just say that. Okay. All right? You got welterweight versus, what is it, light heavy?
That's two different divisions, but I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Let's just say welterweight versus light. Let's say I weigh 148, and that's still welterweight.
Okay.
And you weigh 163.
You're overweight.
That's light heavy. But catch weight
It's lightweight, not light heavy.
Okay. But catch weight is
154.
154. Catch weight is 154. And then you still go up after the fight, after the weigh-in.
That's just human genetics. Like, but you're not, now you're not going up a lot. Like, don't misunderstand. Like, mind you, weigh in typically the day before the fight. You're not going to go up 15 pounds in a day.
Of course you're
now
not.
You might, 50, now, three,
of course,
three
of course
to,
you're
three
not
to, three
going
to five,
50 pounds in a day.
3 to 5 is highly possible.
But that let's just say the person that weighs in at 152 doesn't go up at all.
Okay.
So what you did was cut weight, water weight, and you're not cutting muscle, you're not cutting genetics for the most part to get to this fight. All you're cutting is how much water you drink.
That's not a bad
but
thing.
But that, I mean, technically it's not a bad thing.
Because people, you can't.
But it's still a bad thing.
It's not.
Because when we get to this fight and you're 5 pounds heavier than what you weighed in on, let's just say you're.
That ain't got nothing to do with the strength of your chin.
It doesn't have anything to do with the strength of your chin. But it also determines how fast you can move, how elusive you are.
Not entirely.
Yeah, it does.
There are people who can move. We've seen this. Yeah. First of all, we've seen one of the greatest athletes we've ever seen in sports.
But if that's the case, you should be able to fight at your walk-around weight.
Why?
And that's one thing I've...
There's not a single fighter in any division that fights at their walk-around weight.
Muhammad Ali.
He did not.
He did fight at his weight.
No, he didn't.
No. He didn't fight at his walk-around weight.
No.
But he fought at his walk-around weight division.
That's different. Heavyweight is the largest division gap difference that there is.
He did. Ricky Hatton fought his walk-around weight division and got destroyed by Floyd Mayweather,
The heavyweight division is the one division we kind of got to exclude.
Okay.
Well, let's leave that out because it's 206 to 300.
Okay.
That's a massive range.
So let's leave that out then. Okay,
so if you go light heavyweight has a cap at 205.
Let's leave that out then.
Light heavyweight is 205.
Ricky Hatton fought Floyd Mayweather at his walk-around weight.
What is Ricky Hatton?
And Floyd Mayweather fought at his walk-around weight.
What is Ricky Hatton?
You asked, so I'm giving you examples.
No, I'm asking you a question. You said he did. I'm asking what the question was.
Ricky Hatton was a light heavyweight. I think they weighed in at 195 or something like that.
I guess I just got to do some reading. I've never seen Mayweather fight over 160.
They fought at, well.
I've never seen Mayweather fight over 160.
Okay, fine.
Like, you might be right. I have to look it up, but I've never seen it.
Okay, so let's go to Sugar Shane Mosley. Sugar Shane
fought in three different weight classes.
Sugar Shane Mosley fought, right, but he was in the middle of where he was, which is his walk-around weight, when he fought Floyd Mayweather.
But he also fought up and down. Why is that an indictment on him?
Oscar De La Hoya, he fought at his walk-around weight.
He fought at four different divisions.
But he fought at his walk-around weight. And that's a fact. Yes, he did.
He fought at his peak, which was his walk-around weight. But he also fought under.
And Mayweather had to go up just to fight Oscar De La Hoya.
Yeah, and Oscar De La Hoya also fought under his walk-around weight.
And I never liked that he fought under his walk-around weight.
You were saying that he never fought under his walk-around weight.
When he fought Floyd, he fought at his walk-around weight. And Floyd fought at his walk-around weight too.
You can't name me a champion that fought around at only their walk-around weight. They've all either gone up or down.
That's just how it goes. But Bernard Hopkins wasn't getting weighed every week. But Bernard Hopkins, I guarantee you, if I weighed Bernard Hopkins every week, you just said that I can't name you one, and I just named you one.
We don't know what his true walk-around weight was because people's weight fluctuates.
But Bernard Hopkins. His 10-pound weight difference was always in the same weight class.
A 10-pound weight difference is still a weight difference.
He always fought at the same weight, his same walk-around weight, because we always seen his walk-around weight. No matter what. You saw his walk-around weight.
We didn't follow him all the time.
If the three of us jumped on a scale
every single week, none of us have the same walk-around weight. Because human bodies and the weight fluctuates based on hydration, the way you work out, and what you're doing that week.
But you're not going to tell me you're going to fluctuate between 10 to 12 pounds every single week. That's where you find your walk-around weight.
But you are going to fluctuate between – you can fluctuate between 5 and 10.
And Bernard Hopkins fought at his walk-around weight because weight classes go, what, 10 to 15 pounds, 15 pounds?
Except for heavyweight, because heavyweight makes no sense.
But your classes go 10 to 15 pounds. Bernard Hopkins was always in the same.
But that was
his walk around weight. And you hear boxers say that all the time. That's not his natural walk-around weight. His natural walk-around weight is this. His natural walk-around weight is that. You hear that all the time. And I watch a lot of blogs with fighters, with boxers. Now, bare-knuckle fighting, maybe not so much. I don't know. But for sure, boxing, it definitely makes a difference. For sure. For sure it makes a difference. Especially when you start throwing on them 20-ounce gloves and things like that. It definitely makes a difference. It makes a difference. And that my whole point is that it makes a significant difference. Light heavy and heavyweight makes a difference.
That's two different weight classes, but I understand what you're saying.
But light heavy, heavyweight, that makes a difference
because
in the fight.
We know these weight classes by, we're going to say association. We know your heavyweights are typically not going to go past the first round because somebody getting knocked out. Light heavyweight is interesting because you either get knocked out, possibly submitted. Your lightweight, they tend to get faster. Fights are pretty interesting. Normally a lot more submissions. I'm using UFC for those who aren't paying attention. Then you go down to welterweight and everything else. Now, the obviously, the lower you go, the faster you go. So it's not necessarily knockouts. It's more so counter punches. It's submissions. It's
I hate flyweight in any damn sport.
I love flyweight.
I hate flyweight.
Hey, man, show some love for the 130s, man. It ain't their fault.
No. I will never.
Ain't nothing wrong with the 130s fight.
I will never. Never. When I say never, I will never.
So you don't like the women's flyweight division?
Women's is different.
No.
Yes, it is.
No, because you got a flyweight, a strawweight.
No, women is a little bit different.
I don't. No, fighting is fighting.
Women's flyweight.
What's wrong with the men's fly? I think, dude. First of all, Mighty Mouse was phenomenal at the flyweight division.
That's cool. I don't like men's flyweight. I prefer anywhere between welterweight and light heavy is my favorite division.
I don't have a problem with
to watch.
I don't have a problem with the smaller guys.
As a consumer, that's because you get more knockouts in.
I've seen a lot of knockouts at the flyweight division and submissions too. On top of that,
I don't care for submissions.
I love the art of the sport.
But that's why I like UFC. That's why I like boxing more than UFC. I love boxing more than UFC. So my perspective comes from boxing more than UFC. You know what I'm saying? Like if you bare knuckle fight and you get in the ring, nigga, good luck. Because if you're fighting somebody that's 30 pounds overweight, you chose that dumb shit.
I mean, we're going to say it's kind of what UFC, because the gloves they use aren't very heavy.
Yeah, they're not.
If you got it, you got it.
But that's what it kind of boils down to. My thing comes more from the boxing perspective.
So our whole conversation was kind of like a, we're not going to say a pointless
argument. Null and void.
But yeah, null and void, because you're going with boxing knowledge versus UFC knowledge. But
I don't know too much about you. I watch UFC and things like that. I watch big fights, but I'm not avid. Yeah.
See, and I do watch boxing, but I watch more UFC now than
You want to put money on this Davis is it Garcia? Davis Garcia fight?
Oh, that's gonna be a good fight.
You want to put money on? Hey, OG, I got Tank. You got Garcia over Tank? Shit, he ain't putting no money on that.
I don't know, man. I like both fighters a lot. I'll text you tomorrow. He said, I'll text you tomorrow. Lord help
us. I mean, hey, I'm ready to put 100 on Tank. Woo! We can make a ride to Louisiana. We can make money off of it. I'm ready to put 100 on Tank now, bro. I think Tank is going to win. I'm ready to bet on Tank right now.
I think the fight is going to be close.
It's going to be in March. So,
but I think it's going to be a close fight.
It is.
But I wouldn't be surprised if the fight didn't go past the fifth.
Past the fifth?
You heard what I said. I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't.
Who are you taking?
I don't know. They both have very unique skill sets.
Hold on.
Tank and Garcia.
And Garcia. I got 100 on Tank if you want to take that bet.
What's up, Mama? Say hi.
Okay.
Yeah, say hi.
Oh, now you remember me because before you didn't remember me. Is that that dude? Disrespectful.
Oh, Jinx?
Yes.
That's my brother's dog.
Hey, kiss this. Y'all hear this? Y'all should see how y'all should see how this man hold his daughter on a daily basis.
Yeah, you gotta say hi.
Yeah. Oh, look, man, hey, look, you know what? We done got off topic. This has been another edition of Gentleman's Talk. Happy Thanksgiving Eve, everybody. I hope everybody eats good tomorrow. I hope y'all stomachs are satisfied.
Enjoy the time with your family, your friends. Do. Don't drink and drive. Don't text and drive tomorrow. You heard what little mama said. She said what she said. Lord,
really?
She took the mic.
This.
Enjoy the time with your loved ones. Enjoy just being around people that love you, that appreciate you, that cherish you, that care for you.
Yep.
And be thankful. Because there are those out there who have no one. And those who have no one don't truly understand or feel how it is to enjoy a day like a Thanksgiving.
Absolutely.
And for those who are going to go out there and take that risk and go out there on Black Friday, please be careful.
And by the way.
And don't go to Walmart. Because I've seen people get knocked smooth the hell out. Over some Nintendo Switches.
Yes, sir.
Over some Nintendo Wiis. Because when they drop that pallet, everybody want it.
Yes, sir.
So my advice to you, ladies and gentlemen, get your ass on Amazon. Black Friday on Amazon is phenomenal.
Hell yeah, it's the truth.
Because where you think my motherfucking Christmas shopping is coming from? Amazon.
Yes, sir.
Look, my teenager wants an Apple Watch for Christmas.
A what?
Where it's coming from? Amazon.
You got Apple Watch money?
I got Apple Watch money. Don't worry about that.
Okay. No. I don't want to hear you got Apple Watch money. I want to ask it. You know when back in the day, can I have McDonald's? You got McDonald's money? You got Apple Watch money? You know what a payphone is?
She's not a payphone.
I just want to make sure. Can you explain what a payphone is?
You put the quarters and you dial up the phone number.
Oh, jeez.
Hey, she got good parents. What you mean?
Oh, my God.
She got good parents. Why are you tripping? Anywho.
It's the way she described that shit. That's why I asked. Before we go, well, wishes to your mom. For those of you that don't, you know what I'm saying, not going to go into explanation, but well, wishes to your mom. Hope she make a full recovery. Hey, the parties, the LSG parties won't be the same because, you know, your mom always show up. Your mom always the first one on the dance floor,
100%.
Dog, so, hey.
She beat my sisters to the dance floor, and that's hard to do.
That is very hard to do. So,
Lil Mama bid y'all a farewell as well because she is wiping her eyes and her nose, which means, hey, she trying to go to bed too. She got to drop boogers. I got to wipe them things off.
But you fell for it.
We have completed Season 4, Episode 1, ladies and gentlemen. We love y'all. We appreciate y'all. And we out.
Hey.
Fashion in you and inspire the world to do what you can. If you love it, then fun.